Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And one theory that I'm not obsessed with it, but it's something I find really interesting and apply within my own life and interactions is the theory of the four temperaments. And so what I want to talk about today on the podcast is finding a better way to understand ourselves, other people, and to get at the root of kind of these dispositions people tend to have. Because, I mean, people are all very different. They're different in a lot of ways. But if you notice, there's certain kinds of personality types large groups of people tend to share. And if we can recognize those dispositions, things that people are kind of wired towards, then I think that it can help us a lot in our conversations. It can help us a lot to understand ourselves, understand our spouses, understand our children. Now, a caveat, I am not a psychologist. I have not deeply studied psychology. I'm aware of a different psychological fields. And what I'm going to talk about today is not the only way to understand people. People are complex, they're multifaceted, they have past, presents, and futures. So I'm not trying to give an exhaustive understanding of the human person today, or even of temperaments or dispositions. I just think this is fun, and there's one particular website that summarizes this theory and describes people in a way that, more so than any other website I've come across, I say, yup, that is right on the nose, and explains it. So this idea of the four temperaments. You may have heard of a book a while back by Art and Lorraine Bennett called The Temperament God Gave You, The Classic Key to Knowing Yourself, Getting Along with Others, and Growing Closer to the Lord. The book is called The Temperament God Gave You, and it looks at this classical theory with a religious light. So the idea of the four temperaments goes all the way back to the ancient Greek physician Hippocrates. So you think of the Oath of Hippocrates. And the idea here was that the dispositions that people have back then, it was believed to be connected to a certain kind of imbalance in their bodily fluids. This is called the theory of the humors. And so things like bile or blood, phlegm. What is the fourth one here? I'm gonna have to look it up because I cannot remember. It's blood. Oh, it's two different kinds of bile. It's blood, it's yellow bile, black bile, and phlegm. And so the idea was that your illnesses came from an imbalance in these humors, and even your personality type could be determined based on the levels of these liquids in your body. Now, that, of course, is a discredited science. It's no longer considered a scientific theory, but some psychologists adapt the description. So people said that if you had a lot of blood in you, you were hot-headed, you were choleric. And so people had these four temperaments related to these four humors. Now, we don't believe in the theory of the four humors anymore, but they don't strictly drive the theory of the four temperaments, but I find the descriptions of these four temperaments to be pretty apt for a lot of different people that I encounter. It's just the certain dispositions they have. And I love the book that the title is The Temperament God Gave You. This is just the way you were from the moment that you were born. I want to tell a story about my kids. Well, I'll just say this. I have a strict policy, by the way, on the podcast or on social media. A lot of people, I think, overshare about their children on social media, and I don't think that's fair to them. Like, what's on social media, it never goes away. If it's on the internet, it's gone. You will never get it back. You can never delete something from the internet. And so I'll share things about my kids from time to time. I haven't done that a lot recently, but I'm happy to. But I just feel bad. Like, they're not consenting to it. What if in like 20 years, they're like, hey, I don't want to be on the internet. I don't like this is floating around out there about me, especially if it's a story that could be embarrassing. So if I ever share anything about them, I only do it if I have like 99% accurate, like confidence. It's not going to be something they would be embarrassed by later. But otherwise, I kind of tend towards the idea that I'm not going to share something that they may want to be private. And they're little kids right now, and it's not fair to me to make their lives public just because I am a public figure. And I think that's something we could, even you're like, well, I'm not a public figure. Well, if you're on social media, you are a public figure. You could be out there to all kinds of people. You could say something viral that goes beyond your 100 followers to the whole world. You never know. So that's why we ought to take care. But I will say with my own children, Matthew and Thomas, love them, that they have particular temperaments, ways that they act and respond to situations that were clear in the very first day they were born. That Matthew, the way he acted after he was born, was diametrically opposite to the way Thomas acted after he was born. I'm not going to get into detail about how they acted because for the sake of their privacy, but they're both different. They're very, very different. And I say that now, who knows, in 10 years, maybe they'll be a lot more similar. But I've seen with other people, like, that is just people say, like, you know, the born this way. I was born this way about, like, sexual attraction. I think for a lot of people, they can make the claim when it comes to things like sadness or anger that they were just born that way. The second they were born, they had this disposition or that temperament. And I see that a lot with people. So these are the four temperaments. They are the sanguine, the choleric, the melancholic, and the phlegmatic. So I'm going to go, what I want to do is I'm going to read through this website's descriptions of them, and I'll comment here or there based on my interactions with these temperaments. And maybe you'll figure out what kind of person you are. So if I had to divide them, the four temperaments, I would say that the phlegmatic and the sanguine are very people-oriented. They value people, and they're very oriented towards the well-being and dispositions of other people. And cholerics and melancholics are very object, idea, or outcome-oriented. It's not to say that cholerics and melancholics don't care about people. They can have a deep, abiding love and concern for people. But like the primary thing cholerics and melancholics care a lot about is things that are not a person themselves, but things attached to the people. Whereas phlegmatics and sanguines, they tend to be more phlegmatics and sanguines, more people-oriented, cholerics, melancholics, not as much. You can also flip them and do another way to divide them to say that sanguines and cholerics are more extroverted, and phlegmatics and melancholics tend to be more introverted. So when I go through each one, you'll see what I mean from them, and you'll get to learn more about, I guess, myself. Well, two elements of this, me and then my wife, Laura. I'm recording this now. I'm going to go home and I'm going to try to splice her into this to get her take on this, because I think it would be wonderful. So I'm going to go through each of the four temperaments. Here's the first one that I would say really describes me. For a long time, I thought I was choleric because, you know, they're kind of goal oriented. But when I read about the temperaments, I realized, oh, wait, I'm not choleric, or maybe I'm a little bit choleric. Now, when people talk about these, it's very rare for someone to be just one temperament. You usually have a primary and a secondary. Remember, people are complicated. But for me, the melancholic temperament really speaks through to me a lot. So I'm going to read it for you, and you can dive into the psyche of Trent Horn as a melancholic. So in a nutshell, melancholic people, this is what the website says. The website is temperaments.fighunter.com. I'll include it in the description of the podcast at trenthornpodcast.com. Temperaments.fighunter.com. I don't know who wrote this, so I'm not basing it on their expertise. It's just when I read it, it makes sense to me. So melancholic people are emotionally sensitive, perfectionistic introverts. The defining feature of a melancholic attitude is perfectionism. They are idealists who wish for things to be a certain way, and they get distressed when they are not. They hold themselves and others to unrealistically high standards and get distressed when these standards are not met. This leads them to being self-deprecating because they do not meet their own standards, and critical of others because those others do not meet their standards. Their generally dour demeanor comes from their inner struggle between an imperfect world and a desire for perfection. So I don't try to hold people to unrealistic standards. By reading this, it helps me see where I might have personality flaws I need to measure. I have a temptation to withhold mercy from other people because I just have certain high expectations, and to get down on myself, to really be overly critical of myself when I shouldn't be, when I should learn to love myself and forgive myself. And maybe you're that way too, that you are super critical of others and you're super critical of yourself. You believe in just perfection. You care the most about truth, things being done right, them being done well. And when they aren't, you're like, why aren't people just doing it right? And that you turn it in on yourself. Like, well, why am I not doing it right? Give yourself some grace. God loves you. You don't have to do everything right. Many melancholics wish to learn and to understand, to know the details of every little thing, because to be ignorant is to stray from perfection. They are not content to just accept things the way they are. They are inquisitive and ask specific questions in order to come to a clearer understanding. This leads many of them to be over-analytical, neurotic worriers. I can have a bad habit in worrying about things. I have a bad habit. I worry about safety. I'm like, we better put something on that corner. The kids are going to split their head open. Like I've said before on the podcast, if I wasn't a Catholic apologist, I'd probably be a safety worker for OSHA, Occupational Safety Hazard Administration, or whatever. I'd be like an inspector. This is why I detail oriented. They are tenacious, can't let things go. Good enough is not good enough. They strive for perfection. This is interesting. They think and plan before they act. They are not the types who will resort to rash, impulsive behavior and will panic if they are unable to plan in advance. So what's funny is some people, and I've met a lot of public speakers, they're introverts, but I think a lot of public speakers I know, they're melancholic. And you might think, but wait, wouldn't, because we'll get to the sanguine here. We're going to have Laura come in for the sanguine. Sanguines love to be the life of the party. They love to have extemporaneous public declarations of things. Wouldn't a sanguine be a good public speaker? No, actually, when you look through history, some of the best public speakers are very introverted and they're melancholic because they desire perfection. They're deliberate. They want to plan things. When they give speeches, it's not something that they just do on a whim. They plan it out and they want to have a deep knowledge of their self, of their audience, and a control over their actions. Let's see. They tend to argue, but they cannot simply let things be if they seem wrong. They argue using reason, evidence, logic, and explanations delivered analytically or with pleading. They only argue to set wrongs right rather than to assert dominance. The cholerics assert dominance. The argument is about the issue, not about them. So if you notice me on Catholic Answers Live, like I'm trying to get at the truth, analytical. So once again, like, wow, this really, really speaks to me. They respond poorly to compliments. Oh, so true. Often rebutting them by saying that they're not so great after all. Wow, that's a really nice painting you just made. I don't know, the eyes are probably too big, rather than just saying thanks. Oh, this is so me. They will blame themselves for mistakes because they are acutely aware of their own imperfection. In fact, if something bad happens, if I'm with a group of people, I'll say, it was my fault because I didn't call ahead, or oh, it was my fault, when it actually wasn't my fault. I just think if I had done something different, the bad thing wouldn't have happened. But why should that fall on my shoulder? Why should that fall on your shoulders? If you're always blaming yourself, why? Maybe it's not your problem. It's not your, you don't have to solve everyone's problems in life. If you are the fellow melancholic who worries and is introverted about things, they prefer to tackle the heart of the matter, which can lead them to avoiding beating around the bush. So sometimes they can just kind of be blunt with people. I'm not going to actually read the whole thing. You can read the whole thing. Go to temperaments.fighunter.com. But it goes on to saying that they're very introverted. Once they have someone, they don't like big parties. I'm not a big fan of like huge, loud parties because I'm always distracted because details flood my mind. And I'm like, oh, I'm overstimulated. Once they have someone to talk to in a quiet and relaxed environment, they can talk a lot and will enjoy sharing thoughts and ideas. They don't like big, noisy parties necessarily, though I love when my friends invite me to their big, noisy parties because I love my friends. They're very wary of making friends. Unlike sanguines, it can take them a very long time for them to consider someone familiar. Like melancholics don't make friends easily. Like it takes a long time to earn their trust. But once they've reached this point, they will stick with that person loyally. So like once a melancholic's your friend, they're in it to the end. But it's hard to break through the tough exterior to be a friend. They're very emotional. They're moved by beauty and the perfect. And their moods can be like delicate glass sculptures built up slowly, deliberately, and carefully, but easily broken. They respond to things they dislike with misery rather than with rage. They're slow to, I love this, this is kind of me, slow to snap, but will hold on to emotions for a long time. They hold grudges because people who have failed to meet their standards or have hurt them. And for me, like I have deep emotions. I don't become a very emotional person about things, but that's a temptation I have. Whereas I know other people, when we talk with Laura, sometimes like you get in a fight and then it's like, hey, it's all cool, man. Water under the bridge. Just gotta let it go. Like, no, melancholics, things are, the way to summarize a melancholic is things are very deep and lasting for them. So if you are one or you live with a melancholic, be gracious with them and just remind them of their value in spite of things not being perfect. They're valuable even though they're not perfect. They're valuable because they're not perfect. If they were perfect, they wouldn't be them. So maybe that will help you with your melancholic child, spouse, friend, someone like me. Just remember, things are deep and lasting for us in various ways. I mean, we're analytical, we want the perfect, and we hold people to high standards, and we need to be reminded to show mercy and value people for who they are. All right, now moving on. Number two is the choleric. So melancholics are not people as much, but they care a lot about the truth and about things being perfect. Cholerics are a bit different. In a nutshell, choleric people are the proud, extroverted alphas of our species. Cholerics are leaders and directors. They seek to be in control of situations, to be on top, to be the best. They use imperative commanding language. Compare get me a drink to can I have a drink? They use phrases like deal with it, get over yourself, listen, pal, look, buddy. They word things with confidence and certainty. They are firm and forceful in their approach to problems. If met by opposition, they react confrontationally to defend themselves. They are constantly trying to be dominant in every situation, subconsciously, either by being louder and better than those around them, or more restrained and therefore superior to those who lose their cool. This is important. Cholerics, I know many people in life who are cholerics, but they're good, wonderful people. Cholerics are not bad people. It says, most bullies are choleric, but few cholerics are bullies. Many cholerics will, in fact, stand up to those who bully others rather than letting them get away with things. It's nice to have a choleric on your team because if somebody wrongs you, the choleric will go straight to them and be like, that's not right. You need to fix this. Hey, you messed up my friend's order. You need to fix this now. That's not appropriate. They are very justice-oriented, and that's a good thing. We need people like that. They have a tendency to argue for reasons different than the melancholic. They're more driven by a desire to prove themselves rather than asserting that they're correct. Rather than trying to reach some kind of truth or compromise. The argument is more about them than the issue. They say, let's see, they love competition, but they hate to lose. They're defiant of authority, and they challenge them if necessary. They blame others for their own mistakes, often to the point of trying to save face. So words like hot-blooded, brash, domineering. Now, once again, I know people have choleric personalities and they have to work hard to avoid the negative parts of that, like being insensitive to others, being rude, being off-putting. But when managed, they can be great because sometimes leaders, the best leaders I've ever dealt with are people who say, I'm sorry, I need this to be done by the end of day. Like they're just very firm and clear. And those are marks of good leaders. So choleric can be a very good thing if you manage its excesses. They're extroverted. They respond well to new situations. They seek new thrills. They believe it's important to say things how they are, and they don't sugarcoat. They speak their mind, but often don't mind their speech. They're pragmatic, do what needs to be done bluntly rather than worrying about fantasy scenarios. They generally believe they are right and have immense stubbornness about admitting their flaws. Maybe you know a choleric in your life that gets this way. They strive for independence. They are in many ways opposite of the phlegmatic. We'll get to the phlegmatic here shortly. It's important for them that they are strong and courageous, not afraid of anything. If they are afraid, they will deny it. Again, unless admitting it makes them look strong. So you might have, maybe, I could imagine maybe in your marriage with your kids, it's easy to get into a fight with a choleric. I mean, they're just wired that way. So if you have someone you're always getting into fights with, you got to let the gas out of the situation. One thing that's helpful, my wife has shared with me, showed me, is you should critique them in a way that doesn't belittle them. You have a choleric and you're in a fight with this person. If you say things like you're puny, you're weak, if you say things that try to make them feel small, you can't do anything right, you're just compensating, you're insecure, that enrages a choleric. You're not going to get anywhere. But when you say things, especially for men who are like this, let's say you have a husband who's kind of a choleric and you're in a fight with this person, saying things like, especially for men, stop being such a brute. Stop being such an ogre. I don't know how well this might work with women necessarily. I'm not sure, but I know for men especially that belittling someone, when you belittle them, they turn up the heat because they don't want to feel insignificant. But when you say you're being a brute or an ogre to a man who's choleric, they feel like they have the power, they want the power, and they feel ashamed they've misused the great power that they have, and they don't want to do that. And that's more likely to temper them. So that'd be something that I'd recommend there. Moving on, now let's bring in some fun. Let's bring in Laura, and I'm going to splice this in here. We're going to talk about the sanguines, the people, and what that's like. All right, we finally got the kids down. I think we've got like 3 minutes until your Unisom knocks you out for the rest of the night, which is okay to take. It's like concentrated Benadryl, which helps because you're sickies right now.
I know, my kids are so snotty and they just touch me all day long. And then, yeah, they go to the library and then they lick my face. So how am I supposed to not get a cold every 3 minutes?
Oh, but they're germs of love. I love them. All right, so the sanguine temperament. Sanguines find social interactions with faces both familiar and unfamiliar invigorating. This is how they recharge. Time alone can be desirable, but it can also bore them quickly. They are talkers more than they are listeners. They are bubbly, fun-loving, extroverted people, that's you, who are always in the mood for a good time. They make friends quickly. They'll cheerily talk to strangers. People of the melancholic temperament, yours truly, might perceive a room of 20 strangers as frightening or uncomfortable, while a sanguine might see them as opportunities to meet new friends.
Yes, when we walk into a party with new people and Trent is fading into the corner, I silently kick him under the table sometimes, and he exclaims, "Ow, that hurt my leg." I'm like, "Dang it, you blew my cover. Now laugh at my jokes."
I don't have to. Everyone else is laughing. I can just make sure the corner's doing okay. Someone's got to look over the corner. Let's see. They enjoy social situations and believe that everyone else would too. They're likely to convince people, "Come on, you'll enjoy it," or "You don't know what you're missing."
Yeah, for sure. I have like a flashback of a New Year's one year that I'm like, "Go out with your friends. You'll have a great time. Come on, come on. You'll love it. You'll love it. You'll love it."
You always tell me to go out with friends. You're like the mom on the Sandlot.
I know. That's what I always say. You took my joke. Yeah, I feel like the mom on the Sandlot in that one scene where she's like, "You haven't been out all summer."
Okay. They are very emotional, and their emotions can be extreme but fleeting. They are the sort who will be screaming, "I hate you, I hate you," one day, and then mere hours later, they'll be apologizing and then expecting everything to be water under the bridge. They are quick to forgive and forget and expect others to do the same.
Yeah, that's a little hard, being married to a melancholic, not going to lie. Hold on to things quite a while.
We desire perfection, okay? Things make big lasting impressions on us. They tend to have open sense. Oh, this is interesting. I hadn't noticed them before. They tend to have open senses of humor rather than dry or subtle humor, and laugh and smile often and clearly. I laugh all the time on the inside, or sometimes. So sometimes you say, like, "I don't laugh enough." I do laugh. I do my silent laugh. You know, I'll be like, "Ah," and I'll just open my mouth. And, or I'll do the big grin. That is a way that a melancholic laughs. They'll do the big silent grin. It's okay.
No, but I'm also words of affirmation, so I need it. I need the affirmation.
Well, I love you, and you're amazing, and I'm glad that you're here. They are very show-offy and have high self-esteem. They're prone to bragging in a "look how amazing I am" kind of way, rather than I am better than you, which is more what a choleric would say.
Oh. Yeah, that's very true. The other day, I was like super proud that I took my kids to Mass, and my child found a gumdrop on the floor, and he like started playing like a game with it, like it was a dinosaur, and I took it away really quickly and I put it next to me. And the next moment I was super proud that I was at daily Mass with two kids. So I shot up when it was time to stand, not realizing that the gumdrop was on my tush. And so like all the time, it's like not even justified. And I'm so proud of what I'm doing. And it's like always so humbling.
I'm proud you take them to Mass. That is a good thing. Right. You're like, I want to take pride in whatnot. Let's see. They wish to fit in and be popular. The embarrassment of making a fool of themselves is outweighed by the pleasure of putting on a show. They require constant entertainment and will complain about being bored if they're not sufficiently entertained.
For sure, yeah. We were just watching the debate, and I was like, "No, let's record this. I'm super bored."
They are dramatic and will exaggerate to make things seem more extreme than they are.
That is not true at all. That is not true. I can think of 80 million examples as to why that is not true.
If nobody is paying attention to them, they will barge into a conversation or say something to attract attention.
Yeah, this one's actually a problem. People will be having like really good heart-to-heart conversations, and I for sure will be like inching closer to their conversation, trying to get in. And then I have to like pounce on the opportunity to join their circle. "Oh, I'm sorry. Were we just talking about your loss you experienced? Oh."
Meanwhile, I'm the melancholic in the corner, hanging from the ceiling like a vampire bat. Like, "Trent, what do you think?" And just like fly away. So thank you, dear. Go get some rest.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on. And please pray for us always.
Oh, I heard the kids get up. Well, I better keep recording this podcast. I will go tend to them. Well, I hope that was fun for you all to have Laura jump in on that. Now I'm going to round it out with the phlegmatics. And I love the phlegmatics in my life. Everybody loves a phlegmatic because they get along with people. In a nutshell, phlegmatic people are meek, submissive introverts who live to please others. So the phlegmatic is someone who does not act like they're better than other people. They're eager to please. They're not a doormat, but they take the path of least resistance whenever possible. They desperately wish for peace, for everyone to get along, to avoid conflict. Conflict terrifies them. They do not start it except in extreme circumstances. When forced into an argument, they get upset and distressed. They don't believe they know best. They don't want to be a winner. They're well-behaved. Rebelling against established rules would feel deeply uncomfortable to them. They really, really do not wish to be a bother to others. So you maybe know someone who will just never ask for help, not because they're proud, but because they don't want to bother other people. And they're quick to apologize for mistakes. And they're always saying like, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. I know someone in life, someone told her, stop apologizing. She's like, okay, I'm sorry. Oh, I did it again. But they care a lot about other people and they want peace. Peace is what they want. And so it's like John the Baptist, I must decrease so he should increase. The phlegmatic is someone who decreases so that others can increase and find peace. They're empathetic. They're aware of the feelings of those around them. Very empathetic. They understand people. They're trustworthy. If they make a promise, they will keep it. They're terrified of doing things wrong. So what could be bad about a phlegmatic? Well, one of their personality flaws is that they're indecisive. So they care so much about what people think that they can't make a decision because they don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. So phlegmatics they're great people, but like they're not great leaders. Like it's better to have a choleric than a phlegmatic. If you have a phlegmatic leader, nothing will get done because they're so indecisive. Their language is full of uncertain phrases. I think, maybe, perhaps. Rather than saying or doing the wrong thing, they'll say or do nothing at all. They're introverted. They enjoy time alone, but they're much nicer and more friendly than the melancholic. That is absolutely true. Though melancholics, we try very hard. Once we make a friend, we are in it for them no matter what. They like calm and steady lives free of surprises, and they can be relatively confident in familiar situations, if not necessarily assertive, but they panic when placed in new ones. They don't seek thrills. They like quiet, predictable, ritualistic lifestyles. They can be described as nice guys or girls, but more horribly as doormats. But they don't have to be doormats. They're people who are the calm in the storm. They are the rudder that keeps the keel, that keeps the ship from overturning. So that's a good thing. If you know someone who's phlegmatic, the one thing you might encourage with them is to be able to put their interests first. They don't have to always worry about solving other people's problems. They can assert themselves and people are not going to blame them for it. And it's okay to strike out and make a decision that's best for them. They don't necessarily have to worry about how it's always going to impact other people. So I hope that was helpful for you all. A look into the four temperaments. Definitely check out the book, The Temperament God Gave You by Art and Lorraine Bennett. And if you want to read this website, I'll put it on the descriptions, but it is temperaments.fighunter.com. You may learn more about yourself or about others and how we can relate to people, especially if we're sharing our faith with other people. Sometimes it's not just what we share, it's how we share. And we got to keep in mind different people's temperaments and personalities receive truths in different ways. So thank you all so much, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.